on a little bit before. Okay, this is an interview with Hugh Gordon with Jack McClendon. Jack McClendon, M-C...
M-C-L-E-N-D-O-N.
Say that again.
M-C, little c, capital L-E-N-D-O-N.
Oh, McClendon, not...
McClendon.
Okay. And the date is what, the 2nd of November 2002. Well, Jack, tell me a little bit about your personal background, where you were born and raised.
I was born and raised in South Georgia, Ashburn, Georgia. And
what's that?
Ashburn, A-S-H-B-U-R-N.
I'm not familiar with that. Where is that?
Right on 75, halfway between Cordial and Tifton.
Okay,
a small town.
South Georgia.
Born and raised on a farm down there. In fact, 75 runs right through my old dad's old farm.
Okay.
I ended high school there and started at Georgia Tech in 1944. And then I was drafted and I came back after the war. I went to Southern Tech and got my degree there. And then
what was that degree in?
Mechanical engineering.
Mechanical engineering, okay.
Then I went to work for International Harvester, where I was started off there training for a field service engineer, and I made field service engineer for the National Harvest Truck Division, and worked there for till 1951, and then I came to Lockheed in May of 1951.
Okay, let me stop just a minute. Okay. You came to work at Lockheed in May of 1951.
That's right.
At what job?
As a two planning trainee.
Two planning trainee,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I made two planners not too long after then because of my experience that I had before.
I would say you were especially well qualified
yeah.
to be a trainee with,
yeah.
with a degree from Southern Tech in
yeah.
mechanical engineering.
And so I did, then I was promoted to two planner, and then immediately started doing a lot of liaison work, troubleshooting problems and things like this, and that troubleshooting carried me all the way through in terms of, even though when I was department manager, people like Paul Fritsch used to pull me off of my job and say, we got a problem on the C-130.
But Paul became the president of the company, but he
but at went that through time, the... At that time, he was my department manager when
okay.
he first started that.
He started off in planning,
yeah,
as you did.
That's right, and then when he was a manufacturing manager. He pulled me off a job several times to put me
okay.
on a special assignment.
Let me back up to the point where you applied for work as a tool planning trainee. You responded to a recruitment ad, or how did you find out it from somebody else or what?
No, Frank Johnson knew me.
Oh, he was a employment manager at the time.
And he called me and says, I got a good job out here for you.
Okay.
So and I went out there, and he gave me three choices after he talked to me a few minutes. He said, we can put you in tool design, we can put you in planning, or we can put you in engineering design.
Mm-hmm.
He says, knowing your personality, I don't think you like to draw all the time. And I said, you got that right. So he put me, he says, planning would be your job.
I had a similar experience. I knew Frank through somebody else, and he was his office was in Head House 3.
Mm-hmm.
Of the B1 building,
mm-hmm.
and we just took this entrance with security guards and converted it into an employment office, and I went in there and I applied for a job in personnel. He said, and he pointed to a stack of papers in the corner about a foot high. He said, those are my applications for personnel. I got people in there making $100,000 a year who want to come to work for me. And he said, how about a job as a manufacturing technician? You got a degree in engineering. So that's how I got hired.
Mm-hmm.
let's go back to that point. What was your rank when you your classification that is when you retired?
When I retired, I was division manager over manufacturing engineering.
Manufacturing engineering.
Planning. All the manufacturing engineers and so forth reported to me. All the planners reported to me.
Mm-hmm.
At four departments.
Well, let's go back to the period of time where you were went to school in Ashburn,
mm-hmm.
Ashburn, mm-hmm. South Georgia. You didn't have much contact with blacks, I would suppose.
Not in school.
All segregated.
I had a lot of contact with them otherwise.
Okay.
My dad was a foreman. We had four families of blacks working for us at
okay.
the farm.
Mm-hmm.
But also around town and so forth. On weekends, sometime I would work at a grocery store when I was
mm-hmm.
15, 16, and have to. And that was one of the grocery store was primarily people blacks that went in this particular grocery store. So I had a lot of communications with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never did have any problems with them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you grew up, as I did, in Norfolk, Virginia, in the culture of separation of blacks and
mm-hmm.
what they call the Jim Crow era, where blacks were restricted.
Yep.
And we had colored and white restrooms and facilities and so forth. Let's go back to the time that you first had a working relationship with a black at Lockheed. Can you recall what period of time that might be in?
First one that I had on the floor, I had relationships with quite a few, but I don't remember when that was, because that was just an everyday occurrence as working as lodge and planner.
Going out into the assembly?
Going out to the assembly lines, and if there was a problem there, whoever had the problem, black or white, I had to look at it and see what the matter was
mm-hmm.
and try to come up with a solution.
Mm-hmm.
So consequently, that started as soon as we had some in there.
Yeah.
I remember Harold Mentz's area that you referred to
yeah.
earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I had that.
All right, that would have been the aft section of the B-47, mm-hmm. whatever period of time that is. I've got to perfect my time
that's,
scale.
Yeah. I had the aft. I've worked all over the that line, and forward fuselage, which 41 section was one I did more work because it was the most complicated, and it had a lot of electrical and stuff in there. So
that, was that C-130 or
was that was a B-47?
The section 41,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay. Were the blacks in there?
Yes, they were.
They were. Uh-huh. Do you recall, did they have white supervision?
They were white supervision,
white
yes.
So
mm-hmm.
Was that a segregated department, the 41 section?
Not in terms of workers, but there was segregation in terms of water fountains, restrooms,
yeah.
and things of that nature.
But, okay, that was the period of time in which there were blacks and whites working together.
Yes, definitely.
Could be a rivet gun on one side and a bucking ball on the other side.
That's correct.
Black and white.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
I don't remember any time that may have been, but I don't remember running across any time that the area had all blacks in it or
uh-huh.
all whites.
All right. I've got to perfect my history of that integration. Harold Mintz, it started with Harold,
mm-hmm.
and he had 800 or 900 blacks working on three shifts with two white guys to run shortages. Would they be dispatchers? What were the guys that ran shortages?
They would be a production control. Production control. what do they call it? Dispatchers.
Dispatchers. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Harold told me that they had two white guys to run shortages, and because they had to go into white areas and they didn't want to send any black people
mm-hmm.
into an all white area to ask for assistance in
mm-hmm.
running down parts.
Yeah.
That makes sense to you?
Very definitely.
And we had that problem, didn't we? It,
mm-hmm.
it took the people a period of time to get adjusted to
mm-hmm.
that. Did you, and you'd say very definitely, but tell me a little bit more about the attitude of whites that you could see.
Well, I think a lot of the whites had the idea that we're being rammed down their throat, and
okay.
they didn't like it.
Okay.
That's probably even true some today. But that was an attitude that was very prevalent.
Mm-hmm. I guess that you say, very prevalent. It came up in discussions.
Well, yes, yes.
Nigger jokes?
Oh, yes, definitely.
I experienced
that. It's like a whole lot joke.
Yes, right. Well, they were okay. Let's just stop here. Let's talk about a little bit more about the integration of blacks into the workforce and the reaction of whites. And can you elaborate a little bit more on what you say, the very prevalent resentment because it felt like it was being crammed down their throats?
Well, not particularly for the resentment, that's just what was there, but I can think of two things that for some reason sticks in my mind that I heard about. I wasn't directly involved, but one of them was that when we started having the water fountains with the cups on them,
right.
They had done away with the signs of black on some and white
right.
on others,
right.
The restroom the same way. I remember at the flight line, this one of the manager came up to our manufacturing engineer who works for me, and I said, those water cups just create nothing but a problem. We've had them there a little while and so forth, as they get all, just make a big problem. Number one, keeping them there. And number two, the fact of they throw them around everywhere and just makes a big mess. You reckon I can get away with doing away with them? And we said, well, let's try. So we tried and we did, and we didn't have any trouble with it. Just because it had been there long enough for people to, it wasn't the first blow. When the first blow, people didn't want to drink out of the same water fountain. But,
right.
But
well, this would be in the period starting in 1961, is when we abolished the colored and white facilities, including drinking fountains and restrooms and cafeterias. That would be that time frame. Prior to that, all of the drinking fountains were labeled colored and white,
right.
As like the restroom. And what you're speaking of is that. When we made that conversion and abolished the colored and white drinking fountains to make it acceptable to whites who didn't want to drink after on a fountain, after a black had been drinking water from the same fountain, we put a little canister of cups there. So to and that, but eventually, for the reasons you mentioned, and I understand this to be true too, is that it became more trouble than it was worth, and I guess there was some adjustment made on the whites to, if they were thirsty, they had only one place to go. Okay.
And I recall another instance in the same general area that had this janitor down there that was, I mean, according to the people who worked the area, said he was one of the finest workers around, but said he smelled so badly that they finally said they got to do something about it. He was talking about the manager of the area, was talking to our methods engineer once again. What in the world can we do about that? He said, I'm afraid if I say anything, it'll create a racial problem.
Mm-hmm.
So he suggested he send them down to Dr. Branch.
Okay.
And talk to Dr. Branch ahead of time.
He's medical, in medical, okay.
And so he sent him down to Dr. Branch, and Dr. Branch gave him a lecture on about smelling and keeping himself clean. And then he came back up there later, and you couldn't smell the odor very much because it was covered up, because he put all this perfume on instead of getting rid of the odor. But he leased it. We didn't have any more problem with.
Right.
And we had another janitor that was one of our methods engineers was in the area, in the restroom, and he was in there cleaning up. And he had a bucket, and he had a brush, and he was cleaning commodes.
Okay.
And then he got through with cleaning the commode with the brush. He took another brush and in the same bucket of water started to clean in the laboratory. And so he went and told the manager about what was happening, and they had to straighten him out because he couldn't. He said, I'm using another brush.
Yeah. In that time.
Yeah. but that was...
Well, those examples of culture differences, I'm sure that the blacks that came in and worked like that had no idea that it was a problem.
That's right.
Because
it hadn't told
them, and they'd never worked in an industrial area with the other whites, with white people.
Okay.
Could you tell me with some of the about the blacks rather that worked in your area?
Well, there's two particular people that come to mind that I have several that I can talk about, but I'd like to talk about the ones that I thought were some of the better. And I had Al Burt.
B-U-R-T.
B-U-R-T. He was one of the first black to make salary in planning. And he was a very meticulous, fine feller. He was, in every way you looked at him, he was just above the rest. And he did a good...
Do you know what his background was?
No, I don't. I couldn't remember. I do know he came up for part of the training program. But now, where his background was, I do not remember.
He was promoted from within as opposed to hired outside. So he was probably working on that assembly line or somewhere in manufacturing.
Yes, and then he came into planning as a planning...
trainee,
and so we went through the ranks there,
right,
and promoted to manufacturing planner.
Right, went up to tool planner.
Tool planner, then a manufacturing
and
planner.
Tool planner is the highest rated hourly classification, mm-hmm, in the office and technical categories of employees, right?
That's right.
Under our labor agreement.
Then when he made manufacturing, he was a salary over those people, over some of those
people.
Okay,
he was the...
So he was at manufacturing planner.
So was he the first...
He was the first manufacturer.
To make tool planner?
He was one of the first to make
one tool. One of the first.
I would say it was two of them that made about the same time. He and Eddie Combs, if I remember right, made it about the same time.
Okay.
And they both of those two became manufacturing planners eventually after going through the ranks of tool planner.
Mm-hmm.
But Burt was by far...
That was the management hierarchy. I mean, the classification hierarchy. Tool planner, trainee, you work your way up to tool planner, and then you move over into the salary ranks as the
manufacturing planner.
Mm-hmm. Manufacturing planner.
Yeah. And we had...
Yeah,
he made it on the C5,
okay.
C5 program.
Combs, C-O-M-B-S?
No, that's the second person, yeah. Eddie Combs, yeah, C-O-M-B-S.
Okay.
But Burt made it on the C5, their start of the C5 program.
Oh, my goodness, that would be back in the mid-60s.
Yes.
We got that contract in 65.
Mm-hmm. And so did Eddie. Came right behind him not too long. He made salary.
All right, and you say did they make salary about the middle 60s?
Yes.
Okay, so they had been in the plant probably well into the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take for a person to advance from tool planning trainee to tool planner?
That changed over the time from tool planner trainee, depending on your background and so forth, but... Mm-hmm. It was a requirement that you be there at least 6 months to a year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, did it go right up to tool planner? There was no intermediate classification?
There was no intermediate classification, mm-hmm, but then the tool planner's salary started graduating to be on up. In other words, you didn't get it just a tool planner's salary was not just a one tier. It was several tiers in that.
Of tool planner?
Yeah, well, I say tiers in terms of money,
okay,
not in terms of classification.
All right, you had a range, a rate range.
Rate range.
You advanced in the rate range based on your responsibilities.
Responsibilities.
Okay, the higher paid ones, obviously, mm-hmm, the heavier responsibilities.
Right.
And then you move over to the salary side, and you went up to another level of responsibility.
That's correct.
Let me back up just a little bit and ask you about what a tool planner, what the planning organization does.
Well, that's a broad subject. A tool planning organization has several functions. One is that they start as a pre-planning area. They work with engineering to see that things are designed properly to be able to be made within the tools and facilities of the plant. they give ideas to them from a manufacturing standpoint of making them more productive.
To the engineer. To the engineer.
Working directly over the engineer's shoulders. And that's what we call pre-planning. And they are all salary people. And Eddie Combs ended up being one of those people. That's the pre-planning area. Then we have the planning area. It's broken down into electrical, plumbing, and machine parts and things of it, into various areas. And people there are two planners, and what they have to do is take what the pre-planner has devised. Pre-planner always makes out a map or a plan, a basic plan, says here's the tools I want to make these parts, here's how I want the parts to go together. Where the pre-planner lays out the general plan, the hourly planner takes that general plan and writes all the orders that are necessary to put every tool, every part, every shop to do their job in the plant, whether it be assembly or whether it be fabrication or even installations. They write the planning paper.
All right, let me ask you to stop right here. Now, that responsibility would carry them into contact with other departments in manufacturing.
Very definitely.
Okay. And what would be some of those departments, for example?
It would be any manufacturing department, whether it be final assembly or sub-assembly or fabrication. They would have to, on tooling, they have a lot to deal with tooling, because they had to write all the tool orders,
mm-hmm.
and those tool orders had to spell out. And if they didn't spell out exactly what they wanted, they would be called back in and say, what do you want here?
Okay, but what I'm trying to do is get to the interaction of blacks and whites.
Mm-hmm.
And the tool planner has responsibility to work with a number of areas, manufacturing, production, and tooling.
Right.
And contact the people in those organizations to work out mm-hmm. and perfect the tool orders.
Tool orders and shop orders.
And shop orders, okay. Mm-hmm. I don't recall the tooling organization having very many blacks. Do you?
Only, I don't even remember a black supervisor. It may be in some, but I do remember some few in the actual manufacturing of the tool. But they didn't.
Okay.
They had a few there, like in the template shop and so forth.
Template maker, machinist,
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, there was a paucity of blacks' skill for that kind of work
mm-hmm.
because of history.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to be trained, and I know we did recruit for
mm-hmm.
people to go into the tooling. But I'm getting to the probability of who Combs and these other manufacturing or tool planners would contact, probably white people.
Yes, most of them.
Uh-huh. Did you have any response from that? Did anybody say, don't send that nigga to me, or did you have any problems at all with that?
I don't recall that ever happening. It could have, but not. It was never brought to my attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
Well, did those tool planners? Did they talk to you about that? You remember?
You mean the white tool planners?
No, the blacks.
The blacks? No, no. They never did. They never uh-huh. did complain about that.
Uh-huh.
Now, when the people that got to be pre-planners, like Eddie Combs did,
okay.
they have to contact engineers, the design engineers. And I never had a design engineer say anything either.
This is over in the engineering branch.
In the engineering branch.
Totally outside of manufacturing, mm-hmm. into the engineering branch. And they were all white at that time.
They were all white, just about.
Yeah, and we did start hiring black mm-hmm. engineers later on. Well, we hired them in the 60s, but early 60s.
I never recall anyone, that was never a complaint, and mm-hmm. it never brought to my attention.
Yeah. Uh-huh. How do you account for that?
I think things like those that you showed me in the paper and the people's just attitude that, hey, we got to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, far better than now, I think, everybody had the idea shoulder to shoulder work together to build an airplane. Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of us, a lot of people were inexperienced in the aircraft industry, and they just, mm-hmm. we had to draw from each other.
Mm-hmm. So, whoever could help you was accepted.
Mm-hmm. That's about what it amounted to.
Yeah, right.
And the fact that they knew the planning, the people, both in engineering and in the production shop and the tooling shop, they knew that everything focused around the planners.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't get something good from them, if they didn't help them, it'd be a problem for everybody. So I think that was the attitude, I think, it predominantly existed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. The workplace brings people together with different backgrounds and cultures. But what you're saying to me is in the planning organization, the focus was on getting the job done and who could do the work.
That was exactly the way I felt about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see, do you have any other names?
Yeah.
People?
Let's see, we talked about Eddie Combs and App. Now, there's one person that was always Iowa, still was when he retired. In fact, Willie Wright, he was one of the first black in the area.
W-R-I-G-H-T,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he, there was nothing outstanding in one way or the other. He was, except for the fact of his desire to do a good job and his wanting to work with people. He was just one of those people like that. He wasn't outstanding in his experience and background, but he was outstanding in his desire to work with people, and people, everybody thought a lot of him, still do.
Okay.
In fact, I'm going to a meeting 7th this month. A bunch of people get together, Sharon Martin will be there, and I'll be there, and so the people that work for us in planning service area. Willie was in the planning service area, and he'll be there he's there every time.
Is that right? I would love to talk to him. Could you help me do that?
Yes, I'll see him whatever day, 7th, because that's Thursday, I guess it is. I'll see him Thursday.
Could you do that?
I'll get a number, right? Al Burt and Eddie Combs came to. That group was disorganized, but it was just folded up.
Disbanded.
And Al and Eddie both came to that one on the case.
Do you know how to get in touch with them? Or do you know anybody that could get in touch with them?
No, I don't.
If you can think about that when you all meet again,
see
if you can identify any blacks that were in planning,
mm-hmm.
that and help me to get in touch with them.
Now, we had another one that had, I would say, about as much promise as any one of them. But came in about his Armstrong. I don't know his first name. But he got in trouble outside the plant, killed a girl down in South Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
and he's in prison now.
He was
such a, had so much promise. He was,
mm-hmm.
everybody thought a lot of him, and mm-hmm. we just couldn't believe it when we heard about it.
What was his classification?
He was planner, two-planner.
Two-planner. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now we had a man who put in, now one of the things I didn't tell you a while ago, a functional test was part of our area.
Okay.
We created the functional test procedures, bought all the functional test equipment, and all this kind of stuff, and also manufacturing engineers was our area, which is the manufacturing engineers had to be a graduate engineer, and the same way functional tests had to be graduate engineers. The functional test engineers write up all the procedures, buy all the equipment, and then do all first runs themselves on the parts and assemblies or installations. And we had in the manufacturing engineering area, they were the people assigned to the area, and they bought the machinery, both in the fab area and the assembly area. They laid out they worked with plant engineering to lay out the plant. They said, I want it this way, and then they would put in the little details to it.
That's the area that I mentioned that I was employed in first,
mm-hmm.
as a manufacturing technician. If I'd stayed there, I would have been a manufacturing engineer.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't work there long enough to have
I went through that rank of
did you?
Manufacturing engineer in final supervision.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, what you're talking about here is the key role of the planning organization in the manufacture of airplanes.
That is correct. Manufacturing planning decided how everything else. They turned engineering into finished product.
Okay.
Although they didn't work on the airplane themselves, but they had, and they had trouble. That's what troubleshooters, what they call liars and planners, down on the floor,
right,
to see that things going would go together when they wouldn't go together. Find out.
The liars and planners were a part of the engineering branch. Were they not?
No, they were part of planning.
They were part of planning?
Yeah.
Okay, I remember that.
Now, you had lives and engineers, which was part of the engineering branch.
Okay,
the lives and planners were the people who down on the floor.
I'm thinking about the lives and engineers.
Lives and engineers.
Those are people that you talk to or like.
Every problem had to come to a planner before it went to the lives and engineer. The lives and planner had to just say, well, gee whiz, this is an engineering problem, or it's a tooling problem, or whatever, and work on it. But if he decided, well, gee, I need a little more tolerance, so this part has got interference because of the design, they would have to go to engineering and say, which is the lies in engineering, and say, hey, and show them on paper why they had to change it. Once they did that, then they'd make a PS to it and change it.
You know, what we're really speaking to here is the complexity of building airplanes. The design engineers, the structural engineers and so forth start the process, but it has to be converted into a manufacturing process, and planning has a key role. Well, let's pick up here, Jack, where we were. We're talking about the role of planning in the manufacture of airplanes. And I'm sure that's one of the reasons that the tool planner hourly union represented classification was the highest paid skill in the plant of any hourly job.
That's correct, because of who they had to contact as well as the knowledge they had to have and experience.
The key role they had. Okay, let's talk about the first black that you recall in the functional test area. Would this be the planning part of functional test?
Yes, the function, what they call the functional test planning, yes.
Okay, all right.
We had one fellow that was brought in for a fellow named Moses Charles, and he was brought in to some other part of the plant, I think project engineering, and I'm not completely sure of that, but I know it was some other branch of the plant brought in by you people, and because he had a engineering degree and all this kind of stuff, from where I don't know, but he was brought in and he was failing down there, not doing a good job, couldn't do the job as the way engineering said it, just didn't have the knowledge. So you people came to us and asked if we could take him and try to train him in the functional test area. We said we'd give him a try. In fact, it was an agreement because of budgets that somehow y'all would pay the budget for that period, so a certain period of time. I'm going to say 6 months. I don't remember the exact.
Was this a salary possibly?
Yes, salary possibly.
That's what we call, I think we're talking about the same thing, 89-90 budget.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a training budget,
mm-hmm,
which it that we set up for that very same people primarily to help black employees that were having difficulty in learning the job, and the manufacturing organization didn't have the time and the budget to deal with that.
That's right.
So the president of the company approved this budget. It was free budget.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's what it was. And so we took him in to try to train him. And we trained him to several different people, trying to find an area that he would, because each functional test engineer was assigned a special, he was a specialist, electronics, hydraulics, you know, that kind of thing, pneumatics, whatever. So we tried him in several areas, and at the end of the 6 month period, I guess it was assigned to start with, we told him we just can't find a place that he fits. You know, you came back again and said, well, we'll give you 6 more months, which and so he gave us 6 more months. And before that 6 months was up, we finally just gave up on him. And he was later, after he left us, he was tried some other place in the plant, and he was finally demoted to a salary job, and a very high-paying salary job at Flatline. And he was, last time I heard from him, he may be retired by now, but he was down at the Flatline as a test. Qualification test on equipment, mm-hmm. as an hourly man.
As an hourly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he had to go back, but he went back because we couldn't, and seemingly no one else could find his whatever education he did have, which was a graduate engineer, because he couldn't have been put there to start with that. It couldn't, both places. But they didn't train him well, I don't know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, we had Joanne Wilburn, who came into methods engineering. And Joanne she likewise was a graduate engineer, but she didn't have the experience or knowledge that became necessary. We tried to train her, trained her for a good while, but her personality and so forth did not get along with some of the people she had contact, production supervisors and things like this. And so we finally put her down in planning service, and last account I had, she was still down in planning service as a salaried black woman.
What period of time were we talking about with her?
It was in the 70, late 70s or early 80s.
Okay. What would her classification have been?
She was, her classification was manufacturing engineer.
Okay.
But
do you remember where she got her degree?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Nobody get that close to her.
Right.
She never, although she worked for me as a, well, tried to, we tried to work, but I was manager and mm-hmm. supervisors and so forth were giving me all the details of problems they were having with her, and even some of the production managers were calling and saying, hey, mm-hmm. and that's when we found it.
Well, as a matter of fact, there was only one black accredited engineering college in the country, that's Howard University, rather, out in the Washington, D.C. area, and in 1961, we decided to recruit at other black engineering schools that did not have this national accreditation. And it could have been. And they did have inferior engineering instruction, which goes along with not having the accreditation, but we felt like there were individuals who could make it in those schools, and it wasn't their fault. And she could have been. I can't mm-hmm. say. She may have been from Howard, but that there were a few that we were successful, and that validated our decision. But we also had some others that did not make it. But she made it well enough to be in salary and stay in salary.
Yeah, she did, but she we had to move to where she was.
But she was not fired nor demoted, huh?
No, I'm not sure whether they changed her classification or not, but mm-hmm. when she went to planning service as an hourly supervisor.
Apparently she was demoted from salary then.
No, she went down there as supervisor.
Oh, as supervisor. Mm-hmm. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
She went down there as a...
That's less technical, more management.
That's right.
Okay, she couldn't handle the technical part.
Couldn't handle the technical part. And...
But apparently she must have gotten along with people well. Wouldn't be a supervisor.
She had more or less some of her peers and so forth down there. She wasn't dealing with management and so forth.
Okay. Was she a supervisor of white people as well as black at that time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I won't.
That was probably in the 70s, or you say early 80s?
Early 80s.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Can
we go to another one?
I don't know whether this is the proper place for it, but one of the most efficient blacks that I came across out there, other than the people that worked for me, was a fellow named Ferguson that was manager of the C-130 forward fuselage section, which is the most complicated section on the C-130,
mm-hmm.
where they did all the stuffing of the wiring and the plumbing and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And in dealing with him over the years, he was one of the most efficient people mm-hmm. that I had ever come across in mm-hmm. that area.
What period of time would that be?
Well, that was in, he made supervisor of that area, and he was, I would say, in his late 70s.
Okay.
And he was in that area when he retired. He still had that area. Everybody said, what we're going to do when he retires, because he had that knowledge of how that thing
you, you don't remember his first name?
No, I don't.
Remember what they called him?
Everybody called him Fergie.
Fergie, okay, okay.
He was really a fine, I remember Rochester, he used to do something about football. One of his sons played football or something for the Falcons or something, I don't know.
Oh.
So that at one time, he and Rochester and all was always talking about football.
Rochester was?
He was in charge of C-130 assembly area. He was the superintendent of the assembly.
He was the superintendent for that area.
So, but Ferguson was just, he was just one of the finest blacks of particular knowledge. I never dealt with him outside the plant, but inside the plant, he was always professional and knew exactly what.
Well, do you think that was a surprise to some people?
Yes, a lot of people. It was a surprise when he made supervisor over there, and then when he made manager.
Mm-hmm.
It was a surprise. Well, it wasn't too much when he made manager, because people then had learned to respect him.
I see. But when he first broke into the ranks of management, at the first level of supervisor.
Mm-hmm. But he was in the area, and I don't know whether it's Rochester or who, but I suspect it was Rochester recognized his ability and promoted him in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned to really respect him.
Well, do you think there was a plan? Were they looking for blacks to come?
Oh, yes, definitely. That's always been a plan ever since right after the opening of the plant to promote where you can.
Mm-hmm.
And I have always been, and this is probably maybe, if he's the right man for the job, he's exactly where he should be.
Mm-hmm.
If he isn't the right man for the job, he isn't supposed to be there.
Well, coming from South Georgia, you must have had a personal conversion there somewhere along the line.
No, I didn't. I've always felt that. And just like we had, in coming up, we had one family of blacks that worked for us that just was superior. And Dad more or less put them in charge of the others, because they just recognized the ones that's best.
Mm-hmm.
You
joined a group of people that didn't feel that way at all.
Well, yes, but I've always felt that he's black, that's nothing against him,
yeah.
unless it's his attitude that makes a difference.
Well, there's a period in time when you were a minority and with that feeling.
Mm-hmm. But when they try to ram it down my throat, I get my back up too.
Okay.
You know,
I understand.
You understand what I'm saying?
I understand. You got a job to do,
mm-hmm.
and you do what's necessary to get the job done. But that everybody doesn't feel that way, and mm-hmm. we had a lot of resentment. We know that. Let's see. There was you had a couple of other experiences with people. You had some bad experiences.
Yep, we had some bad. The one with T.U. Evans was the worst.
What was his first name?
R.L. Evans.
R.L.
T.U. That's different Evans.
Okay.
R.L. Evans.
What was his job?
His job was although he had a doctorate degree in divinity. He was an hourly planner. He was promoted. He went through the ranks of tool planner trainee to hourly planner, and he thought that he should be made manufacturing planner, but he wasn't qualified. He never tried to make himself qualified. It was the main reason.
Okay.
He just thought his degree would get it for him. A lot of the planters didn't have the degree.
Okay. Can you elaborate on that? How do you know that?
By the jobs that he fouled up, by his attitude towards everybody, his attitude that he could do what he wanted to at any time during the day without any relationship to what his supervisor had assigned to him. The job could go behind schedule and he'd still be out talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
And so every job that went through had a time limit on it. There was
right.
a due date. He'd be late on almost every job he had. He would file up, write the wrong tool orders, or say the wrong thing on tool orders. His write-up of planning instructions would be highly inadequate. And he would send them parts to the wrong shop to get something done to it. He just goofed up all the time, consistently. And he shouldn't have been ever promoted from tool planter trainee to tool planter, except for the fact that it's being pushed so much that you can't throw these blacks out that you got in. So it was he never should have gone there.
What you're saying is the management there felt like that they couldn't refuse to promote him to a tool planter.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because he was black.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they felt they couldn't, and so he got to be a tool planter, but he never was successful as a mm-hmm. tool planter. I'm not even sure how much knowledge he had because he goofed up so many times it was brought to me. And
well, do you know that if he was hired in at Lockheed for the assembly line, or did he come off the street, or what?
He came off the assembly line somewhere.
He did. So he, even though he had a PhD in divinity, he hired in probably in the lowest level of the aircraft assembler.
Yep.
Assembly helper, I mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he did progress to the highest rated hourly classification in the plant.
Yes.
But he wanted to go into the salary ranks, mm-hmm. and he didn't make it for the reasons you mentioned.
That's right.
You told me earlier that you had some problems with him in lost time, too.
Oh, yeah. He would just go out in the plant and be gone for hours on end without anybody knowing where he was, and no excuses that we could ever find for him to be
was
gone.
Was he disciplined for that?
Yes, he was.
Mm-hmm.
He was disciplined several times.
You give him an EPN,
mm-hmm.
Employee Performance Notice?
Certainly did.
I talked to him.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, when you left Lockheed, where was he at that time? Was he still working? Or?
I think, yes, he was still working. I heard he retired right after I did, but I'm not so sure how. Right now, I don't remember since I wasn't there, but somebody told me he retired, and that was.
Refresh my memory. What you told me? What was his classification?
Two plan.
He never made it to the salary.
He never made it to
okay.
the salary.
Okay. Can you give me another example or two?
Yeah. Now this one I don't have too much information. Marilyn Eason was a woman, black.
Eason. E-A-S-O-N.
Ellison. Excuse me.
Ellison.
Ellison.
Marilyn
Ellison.
Ellison. Okay.
She came in as a along with Joanne Williams, Wilburn, about the same time. And not for the same reason of Joanne, but she wasn't as sharp as Joanne, I don't think.
What hourly classification did
she
it?
She came in as salary.
Oh, she did.
But she was mm-hmm. brought in like Joanne was brought in, but like Joanne Wilburn and her were both brought in as salary engineers, manufacturing engineers.
Manufacturing engineers.
Mm-hmm. And She did not make
from
it.
Outside?
From outside.
My word.
And they both had the college credentials.
Okay, what period of time would this have been?
About the same time, that was about in 80, I guess it was about 80, either mid-80s or low-80s, somewhere in that.
Okay.
We were bad of need of, we had open recs and personnel bring these people in. Wally Dreyfus, in both cases, was the one that hired them.
These would be hired in through employment.
Mm-hmm.
And Wally Dreyfus would be the one dealing with employment on this, making the selection.
I never did hear as much about Marilyn as I did about Joanne Wilburn, but yet she did. She also did not make it as an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Now I knew Joanne fairly well, but I did not know Marilyn that well.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure whether she's still there. I know she's not a methods engineer, but whether mm-hmm. she's still someplace else in the plant, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there was another black employee that you were having a problem with that you had to deal with, that you spoke to me earlier about.
That was about Evans, wasn't it?
And you had somebody go talk to him?
That was, this is one that, when he was in the other area that I was telling you about, Burke tried to straighten him out.
Okay.
As long as he was working for Burke, he was straightened out pretty good. But then mm-hmm. when he was reassigned over to over the C-130 to me, he was on C-5 at Burke, and he was assigned over to me, and I was manager of 4711. And that's when he entered these lawsuits and all these grievances about not being promoted.
R.L. Evans. Mm-hmm. Wasn't it time when one of the blacks went and talked to another one of the blacks?
That's the same person. That's the same person. That was when.
And what did he tell him?
He told him that he had to straighten his ways up, but he's going to meet him outside and straighten him up.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Did that get results?
That got results as long as we had him working for us.
Okay.
But as soon as he was reassigned to somebody else,
I've heard the story, and it seems that it rings a bell with you, that one time there was having some problem with a black, and one of the other blacks went to him and talked to him about it and said, if you don't straighten up or something like that, we're going to put you on the 41 section. And he said, what do you mean a 41 section? He said, Highway 41.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard that story?
I have heard the same story.
Is that pretty authentic
mm-hmm.
story?
Mm-hmm.
You know who it could have been?
No, I don't. Don't know. I've heard that same story, but I don't remember now who it was.
Isn't that something? Well, you're validating at least the fact that we both heard the same story.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Now, let me ask you about the Lockheed Management Club, which when we started putting blacks into salary jobs, they were eligible to participate in the management club. Do you remember that period of time when
you
first had blacks coming to the management club?
Yes, I
did.
Dinner
meetings that we had. Did was anything particularly you should remember about that?
I remember. Well, the only thing I can remember is that most of the whites did not want them to come sit at their table.
Okay.
I remember that, and. With a few exceptions where people had gotten close to one, I won't say Rochester because he's the one that headed some of that kind of stuff.
Well, Rochester was a superintendent. He was reported to the production manager, probably,
yes,
didn't he?
He was the production manager,
mm-hmm. okay.
superintendent.
Okay.
But he let it last. But now he was nothing but a department manager when he started having some of these guys that he would see every day, talk
mm-hmm.
to every day, and got respect for, then he would, what was it for me?
Mm-hmm.
And so he was one of the first that I knew of that did that.
Okay.
He's
probably not alive.
He isn't.
He
dead.
Was older.
Yeah, he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
But now you didn't see Shoemaker or anybody like that doing it.
Yeah, the other executives at his level weren't that open about the acceptance of blacks.
That's right.
I think he was exceptional in that regard.
He was.
Mm-hmm.
Because it, as
and you could see that at the management club, didn't
you? You could see it at the management club, you could see it at the plant, too.
Is that
I was
right?
saying about them, he would always be talking to
mm-hmm.
Ferguson about the Falcons and things like this. Mm-hmm.
Well, other whites noticed that, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. And it rubbed off on
him. It rubbed off on him. That's leadership.
That's right.
That's leadership.
Rochester and I were real good friends together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But as I said, I knew virtually everybody in management for the manufacturing and almost all in engineering, all the executives in engineering and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Carol Dallas and I were very good friends.
Mm-hmm. He's an engineering executive, go back to the, as I recall, when Black started integrating the Lackey Management Club, the annual Christmas dances were discontinued.
Yes, I remember that.
And the reason?
Because of the Blacks dancing with the white women.
Okay.
There was a little, they didn't have too much of that, but they had just enough to create a...
They were afraid of it.
Afraid of it.
Mm-hmm. They didn't want to deal with it.
I don't ever recall seeing it happen. I didn't go to, back in those days, I didn't go to management club that much. I was supervisor back
mm-hmm.
in those days and so forth. So although I was a member of management club and went occasionally, but
mm-hmm.
I didn't go every time like some people did.
Mm-hmm.
And very seldom did I go to the dances.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But okay. But they were discontinued for a period of time.
Yeah, I
don't know
heard
whether it ever was resumed or not. I don't recall that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Let's go back to the integration of the cafeterias. This would have been in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
We had, what, three cafeterias down in the tunnels of the V1 building?
Right.
Two white and one black
mm-hmm.
color.
That's correct.
And
had one over in B2.
And one in B2.
That was white only.
White only. And so we integrated the cafeterias in 61 with our first plans for progress. Does that name mean anything to you? Remember the plan for progress, the affirmative action plan
mm-hmm.
was, we had the first in the country, and that was when Lackey got the $1 billion contract to build 100 C-141s. This would be in March of 61. And a resolution of that, the plans for progress, was created by Lockheed and approved by the government.
That was in what year?
1961.
That's about when I made manager.
Is that right?
I was on the C-130, and when they moved out to start the 141, I made manager of C-130.
Okay. Well, at that time, we abolished the colored cafeteria. And we set up canteens, and we put them on the main floor, which also facilitated production because it was only half-hour lunch periods,
mm-hmm.
and we had to feed a lot of people in a short period of time. So we established these canteens.
Roach coaches.
Roach coaches is a popular name for them.
Right.
Right. And. And that was where you would go in and get your sandwiches and
mm-hmm.
what have you and take it back to your work area.
Mm-hmm.
What do you recall after the abolishment of the cafeteria? Did blacks and whites congregate together? Did they meet? Did they eat together? What was your experience on that?
I remember seeing some eating together, but most of them were blacks on one side,
mm-hmm.
whites on the other, if down in the work area, don't
we? Right. Mm-hmm.
Plus, we didn't have too much of that up in our area because everybody had their own desk, and what they used to did is come back to their desk
right.
and eat, and a white was here and a black was here.
So, mm-hmm.
The only occasional black, but
mm-hmm.
didn't have that many blacks.
Well, was there a period of time in which there was distinct, separate groups?
No.
And your area was a little bit different because they
ate
at the desks.
That's right. They more or less ate.
And the desks were not separated into white and black.
No.
They were all intermixed.
Intermixed. Whichever desk was available when a man came in, that's your desk.
That's your desk, okay.
And we never moved anybody for reasons.
I see.
Even if somebody complained, we.
Right, yeah.
We stuck with it, said, no, that's it, that's.
Do you recall when blacks started going to the B1 cafeteria?
No, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't.
Good.
I guess it's when they closed.
When they closed the colored cafeteria.
When they closed the colored cafeteria and started to, and having those Roach coaches, and they wanted to go get something to eat.
I still wince when you say Roach coaches, I was responsible for those. The first canteen was designed by a plant engineer, and it was made to order. And then after that, we bought these from a company in Memphis, pre-made, and we called those Memphis units. And then later on, it was a company in Texas that we contracted with, and they were called Texas units.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some executives from other aircraft companies come to Marietta to look at our method of feeding because it was so efficient. In fact, we had an Italian group, what's the company in next high tech company in Italy that made airplanes?
Aerospace?
No.
No, that's me. I've been over there.
It'll come to me. If you think about it, let me know because
I got some paper somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, they came over, representatives of this country, and they came over to New York, and then they came down. They said, well, you need to go down to Lockheed and Marietta because they found a way to do that, to feed people in a short period of time. But in Italy, they had the custom of people would bring their bread and their salami and their cheese, and they had a hard time getting them back to work. So they wanted to know how to do this. So I remember we entertained those people, took them around, showed them how we did it, because we had, oh, I don't know, 20 or 30 of those canteens spread out all over the country. The name was not very long, it was pretty short.
I remember. I had to go over
there. One of the world's largest companies.
Yeah. And I'm going to give you a little something else. So that,
go ahead.
Promote for that company.
Okay.
First time I went over there, we were OC Brockington and two or three other
engineer.
An engineer. We were all going over there, but they were going to buy some C-130s.
Okay.
And they wanted to have some offset, and we were going over there to talk to them about this and all that. But anyway, we went up, and we were up in the executive area, and everything was normal up there.
Okay.
But down in the production areas,
mm-hmm.
the toilets did not have any seats on them.
Oh, my goodness.
None of them. We went back up, and they said, all the executives told us, come back up here if you got to go to the bathroom. Because if you went down there, you had to just sit down over them because you sit on that cold.
Cold porcelain.
They said that kept them from going in there and sitting down, wasting time. And the whole plant was that way.
I know we had a big problem with wasting time in the restaurants because people go in there and just stay a long period of time.